This WJBC This Week.
We must reclaim our country's destiny and dream big and bold and daring.
Being your candidate has been one of the greatest honors of my life.
There are subpopulations and underrepresented groups who have some legitimate and serious concerns.
First opportunity I have to serve in an undivided government.
They also looked at what was happening in the office itself, so it was a very extensive investigation.
One of the things that our foundation strives for is to put love in action.
I'm so appreciative of what this community has done for me and my family.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, a look back at an historic and unpredictable election. We'll hear analysis on what we might expect from a Donald Trump presidency and how come the pollsters were all wrong. Marijuana advocates had a big day at the ballot booth, with four states legalizing recreational use of the drug. Plus, Illinois State football is a family affair. We talked with Coach Brock Spak and two of his children who have played key roles in the program. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. The election of Donald Trump as president gives Republicans full control of Washington for the first time in a decade. So what now? Republican Congressman Rodney Davis, who was just reelected to a third term, talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin this week.
Will you succeed in repealing and replacing Obamacare?
I think we have to. We've talked about it so much to the American people that we have to put our replacement plan in place. And it has to happen for families here in central Illinois, Scott. I spoke with a small business owner in my hometown of Taylorville just last week who got his premium renewals. They're 87% higher than last year. And that's with a $6,000 deductible. He can't afford it. His family can't afford it. We've got to make sure that we actually put a plan in place that's going to save taxpayers money and also save families the ability to actually be able to use their insurance that they pay for.
Congressman, you've had 8 years to think about repeal and replace. Is there a plan?
Absolutely. This is what was great about what we tried to do in the House over the last year. We developed an agenda. It's called A Better Way. All your listeners, please go to better.gop. That's our blueprint that we're now going to be able to implement with a Republican Senate and a Republican president. And I'm excited about it.
And what was that web address again?
Better.gop.
Better.gop. Yep. And on that website, we will see the Republican Party's plan for replacing Obamacare.
You will see our framework to replace Obamacare, and I look forward to working with my colleagues and our new president to make that happen.
All right. What else would you like to see in the first 100 days of his administration?
Well, I'd like to see him nominate a Supreme Court justice that's going to stand up for the Second Amendment and also protect the sanctity of life. That's something that I believe he's going to have to do in the first 100 days, and I hope that the Senate can quickly get that person confirmed. We need a Supreme Court that's fully filled, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to see that process move forward.
Are you?
I think he also has.
Go ahead.
I think he also has to look at making sure that we continue to reduce spending in Washington, but not only do that, but also reprioritize how we spend, and that's going to take some tough decisions with some of the programs we have in place that are going to ensure that they're there for future generations. And he's got to be able to come together and work with us to make that happen.
Are you hoping or do you think that there'll be a reversal back to the Supreme Court, a reversal? You talked about the sanctity of life, the reversal of Roe v. Wade?
I'm not going to speculate on what I see in the Supreme Court, but as somebody who is proudly pro-life and endorsed by the National Federation for the Right to Life, I would hope that somebody that is nominated to the Supreme Court would have the same core values and principles that Justice Scalia has.
So, not so long ago, you were backing Donald Trump until he opened up his mouth 10 years ago. It was on tape, and we all know about the bus and Billy Bush and his comments. And you decided at that point, okay, enough's enough. I have to wash my hands of this guy. I can't support him. And you stepped away from a committee that he had appointed you to. However, that committee had never met yet, that agriculture committee. Are you worried about a vengeful Donald Trump? Because this guy has a history of he won't forget. And are you worried about that? Maybe he primaries you by bringing a candidate into your district, flying on Air Force One, and making a lot of noise.
Well, I think that a new president-elect's going to have a lot of issues to deal with besides having a divided Republican Party. I think his speech last night talked about unification, talked about actually addressing some of the major issues that this country needs addressed, and I look forward to working with him to make that happen. Look, I think, you know, what I've been able to show the voters of this district, Scott, is I'm not afraid to stand up when I agree and disagree with anybody in Washington, whether they're a Republican or a Democrat. And I think that's what the voters sent to Washington in electing Donald Trump. And I look forward to working with him and the rest of my colleagues to really make the decisions that are going to change the way America operates, because that's what the American people said they wanted last night.
Talking with Congressman Rodney Davis, it was pretty much in the bag for you early on, so I imagine you were focusing on a couple of other races, including the race for President of the United States. Take me through your night a little bit, if you can, because sure. It was nip and tuck till the wee hours of the morning. What was your reaction when you realized that Donald J. Trump was going to be the next President of the United States?
I was excited to have a Republican president. This is the first opportunity I have to serve in an undivided government. Now's the time for us Republicans to really, you know, talk, not just talk about what we want to do to solve problems. We now have the majorities to do it. And I'm looking forward to going back to Washington on Monday to really look at these majorities and look at our ideas, look at the agenda that we helped craft that's going to be the framework for our new president to follow. And these are the types of decisions we've been talking about making. I got to Washington 4 years ago, and now we get a chance to actually enact him into law.
He's got some big plans taking care of our servicemen and women, which I totally agree with, building up the infrastructure. He refers to some of the airports as third world airports. That's all going to cost money. And now we're not even talking about building the wall. That's all going to cost money. Congress controls the purse strings. It's a Republican majority Congress. Are you going to let go of the money he needs to do what he wants to do?
Well, Congress has given up their ability to control the purse strings because we've had a divided government where the president has realized that if he doesn't want to work through our appropriations process, he gets a seat at the table to negotiate what he wants in an end-of-the-year spending bill. That's got to change. It's got to change under Republican-controlled government. And that's something that I'm going to continue to work on. I've talked about how we reprioritize how Washington spends money so that we can invest in infrastructure. We can invest in things like pediatric cancer research. Those are the types of issues that we can truly address when we have people in Washington who are willing to stand up and make some tough decisions. And that's exactly what the American people said they wanted last night when they elected Republicans to control all houses of government and the White House.
That was Congressman Rodney Davis with Scott Laughlin. Donald Trump has had his Republican critics, including the former Illinois Republican Party chairman, Pat Brady, now a political strategist, who also talked with Scott Laughlin this week.
You know, you got to accept the election results. You can't whine and cry. And listen, I wasn't a Trump guy, as you well know, but he's the president. We got to get behind him. We got to give him an opportunity to govern on both sides.
Now,
would have done had Hillary Clinton won.
Are you just saying that to get back into the folds of the Republican Party, who many of you have angered by your outrageous remarks on Donald Trump?
Absolutely not. I have no interest, financial or otherwise, in that. My whole position was based on the principle that he wasn't truly a conservative, and the principle he articulated he was not. And I still have questions about his fitness to be commander-in-chief, but those questions are over now. He won, so I was wrong on him being electable. He won, and now it's time to get behind him.
So
I don't like or endorse any of the misogynistic or stupid things he said, but the reality is he's president of the United States. Which is,
I know.
We'll see how he does.
It's so bizarre. I don't think he's going to do well. I hope he does. I just don't think he's got it in him. As a matter of fact, I think in a couple of days, maybe he'll come out with an announcement. Maybe he'll give it a year and then do a Sarah Palin or something, you know? Yeah, no, this really isn't for me.
Well, here's the deal. And everybody, we all, and I'm not going to stop criticizing anybody that I don't think is doing the right thing public policy-wise that's been elected office. That's almost our obligation, but it's also our obligation to not root against the country. And I want to give the guy a chance to govern. I think we all need to do that. But believe me, I have questions, too, as I've had all along. But we got to give him a chance.
Well, I said yesterday, unlike, I can't never remember his name, Republican Senate President.
Which one? For here?
The one that came out as soon as President Obama was announced, the president-elect, somebody asked him, and he said, well, I'm going to do everything I can.
Mitch McConnell.
McConnell, yeah.
It's like killing a Supreme Court nomination with just saying we're going to oppose it just because we're going to oppose it. That's not good. Nobody wants that. That's why Trump got elected.
No. You know, and I was against him just like you were against him. I didn't think he had a chance. I didn't think he had a snowball's chance. And then he wins, and I'm like, you know what? I hope he does well. I don't think he will, but I hope he does well. I hope he does so well that he gets reelected in a landslide election, which can only be good for the country.
Well, here's I agree with that. But some of the things that he talked about, the wall and then throwing Hispanics out, well, that's not going to happen. The fact that Mexico's going to pay for the wall, that's not going to happen.
No, they already came out.
That was my question with him. It's the first candidate of our party that never talked about entitlement reform, which is two-thirds of the budget. And some of the things that the core principles of the Republican Party, like trade. And I understand these trade deals aren't perfect, but we're not an anti-trade party, and we think that's good in the long run, the free trade. But he is against that. So we'll see what he can actually get accomplished.
And what happens to all the trumpeters when, after 2 years, there is no wall? After 2 years, nothing's been done with trade. After 2 years, nothing, or very little, has been done with immigration. Immigration's something that we've been talking about for decades. And nothing seems to get done.
I agree. He's in a tough spot politically. He rolled out his 100-day plan yesterday. I need to sit down and read it. But he's in a tough spot because he made a lot of promises. The Post had a good article, the Washington Post yesterday, on the promises he made. And he's got himself boxed in a little bit there. But to me, the answer is, and this is actually something that Hillary Clinton was going to do or was talking about doing, I think what the country might need is a big infrastructure project that can appeal to both sides of the aisle and something the country badly needs, get a win on the board of something that makes sense, and then try to deal with the other issues as you can. But I think it would be a huge mistake, and I think we'll see if he does it, to immediately name a new person to the Supreme Court and start the argument there, because that's happened before. That doesn't help us.
How soon would we expect that, though? Before he even takes office? Throw some names out?
Well, I mean, he could probably, I don't think it would be smart politically, but he could leak it out and say, this is what I'm going to do. My point is, just on that, why start with an issue that's going to be immediately divisive when you could start with something that people can rally around? He's got it up. It's all up to him. He's got a great opportunity here to do the right thing. I think he's going to do it. I don't know.
He's got the House. He's got the Senate. Majority on both of those. Is he going to have cooperation from a majority of the Republicans?
Well, in the House, the Freedom Caucus has been kind of the fly in the ointment the last couple years, and it's a small group of people in the House, hardcore Tea Party types that don't want to play ball with anybody, and the perfect is the enemy of the good, so we'll see if they play ball. That's what I'm thinking. If something can come up with something that's got something in it for everybody, including Democrats, which the country needs, maybe that's a better start than going into the culture or social wars that we talked about during the campaign probably too much.
That was former Illinois GOP Chairman Pat Brady with Scott Laughlin. So how did so many pollsters have the election so wrong? Bob Bradley, retired political science professor from Illinois State University, talked with WJBC's Susan Saunders this week.
We have elected as our 45th president of the United States of America a man that no one predicted would win the chair, President Donald Trump. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, you're exactly right, except that there was one poll out of the West Coast, out of Los Angeles, that consistently predicted Trump was going to win. And it actually goes to a really interesting question, and that is, how did 99% of the pollsters get this wrong, and yet this one did?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because the poll that consistently called Trump to win basically used more modern polling techniques. They depended on social media. They were looking at Twitter feeds, Instagram, social media sites, and didn't rely on traditional polling, which was basically using the phone. And almost everybody that used traditional polling was off by a lot on this. I mean, ultimately, what this election could spell in an interesting way is the elimination of traditional polling companies.
The ability to call somebody on their phone is now more limited than ever before. You have no call numbers. You have people on cell phones that have phone numbers that aren't registered within pollster banks to choose mm-hmm. from, and a lack of landlines at home. I find it interesting, though, you bring up social media. As they were checking on social media, maybe like minds surround each other with like minds, but I'm not seeing a outcry of joy on social media this morning by people who did vote for Donald Trump. Does that surprise you?
No, and I would say the same thing regardless of the result of the election because of how close this election was. And that is, if Clinton won, I don't think there should have been joy if she had won. And I don't think there should be joy that Trump won, primarily because this election, more than I can remember in a long time, demonstrated how polarized this nation is. And one of the areas of polarization that didn't really was not picked up by political pundits as much as they should have, or by pollsters, is the rural versus urban split. And if you were watching the election results last night, they weren't going necessarily by state to predict what was going to happen. They were going county by county.
I saw that.
And essentially what they were doing was saying rural counties were really going red for Trump, and that urban counties were really going blue for Clinton. And it really showed the split, which also ties back into why pollsters got this wrong, because those rural areas, and particularly white males and in some cases substantial numbers of white females in rural areas, are about the hardest to contact in terms of what their numbers are in the nation, exactly because of technological limitations. And so it's really hard to tap into that. And it was very interesting last night because there were a lot of people who were on the conservative side, Glenn Beck and others, and Steve Schmidt and others, and for people that you may recognize those names because they're people that work for Republican administrations, were making a lot of comment. And they were saying the group that they were least hearing from and should have paid a whole lot more attention to was rural America.
Is rural America, in your experience, harder to campaign to and change their minds?
I think in a lot of ways, rural America dictated a lot of what Trump was campaigning on matched a lot of the feelings in rural America. And that is, boy, we don't like change, and we certainly don't like fast change. And we really would like things to go back to the way they were some decades ago, before we had to deal with all this change, that, you know, technological change, social change, things like that. Also, in a lot of senses, rural America is probably the place in this society that feels that they've most lost or felt most threatened in terms of their status in society.
And yet Donald Trump was campaigning on a platform of change to get away from the way the office of the White House had been used, the way Congress and the entire House of Representatives and Senate had been taking all of this power and not letting the common man be informed. So isn't he a candidate for change?
He is, but it's the type of what he is in a lot of ways blowing up the system. And that's what rural America felt, that Washington wasn't paying any attention to them. and they felt alienated, and they felt left behind. And here's a person who's promising, I'm going to bring back jobs, and I'm going to make things better for you, and I'm going to do things to those elements that frightened you, particularly immigrants, particularly people that may not think like you do.
Or have the same religion.
Or have the
same
religion.
Skin color.
Right, and so I'm going to deal with them and what how they're threatening you. And that was a very, very well-received message in a lot, as we saw last night, in a lot of parts of the country.
That was a retired ISU professor, Bob Bradley, with Susan Saunders. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. WJBC This Week. Marijuana won big on Election Day as four of five states approved the use of recreational marijuana, while several more states approved medical marijuana use. Chris Lindsay is a legislative analyst with the Marijuana Policy Project, a group that advocates for legalizing marijuana. Lindsay talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
Such a big chunk of the country, they will have recreational marijuana. And what message do you think that will send to other state leaders around the country, including Illinois?
Right. So, you know, I don't know that any one state, including California, would have necessarily changed the course of history here. Now, to be sure, California is an enormous population, a huge economy. They have a very active business community. They have a very active medical marijuana community. All these things lead folks to say, look, you know, California is going to be a pretty amazing place to see how things develop over the next few years. But if California had said no, I doubt that it would have changed the course that the that our country's taken on this. And so it's certainly encouraging, and I applaud it. I welcome, you know, the news. It's going to be exciting. But I don't think that they were essential to the end of marijuana prohibition in our country.
I want to bring up what some of the people against this, the referendums that were on the ballot, what they're saying. They're saying it's going to increase people smoking and driving behind the wheel as far as being high, and that our kids will get their hands on it. How do you respond to those criticisms?
Well, you know, they're common. They're also not really based on science. And so we end up having a similar conversation from state to state to state. And what happens is, you know, the DUI area is one that very few people disagree about. You know, I don't hear anybody say, hey, you know what we need are more dangerous drivers out on the road. Whether or not legalization actually contributes to increased impaired driving isn't clear. You'll talk to one group and they're absolutely certain, and they'll say, look, you know, before we found X number, we find three times that number. So of course, legalization is the cause, but you know, there's more going on here than necessarily meets the eye. One is that law enforcement really wasn't looking for marijuana-based impairment before, and they are now. And as detection gets better, as law enforcement gets better trained, and as they're watching for it, it's no surprise that they might get better at detection. And, you know, while it might be true, at the same time that they'll say, oh, yeah, it's tripled, you know, DUIs based on marijuana just in, you know, 3 years or whatever, okay, well, that means that it went from, you know, 3 to 6, compared with hundreds of alcohol-based DUIs. So, you know, there are ways of looking at what's happened to backfill a narrative. And those who are opposed to marijuana legalization have kind of got their talking points down on this thing. And so we'll hear those arguments, but I think once you actually look at what's going on underneath the numbers, I think most people kind of see where it's coming from. Kids use is in that same vein. You know, we see report after report coming out saying, you know, teens don't, there isn't any evidence that teens are consuming more in legalization or medical marijuana states. Does that mean that we don't care about teens consuming or, you know, any of these things? Well, no. But if you're going to throw out there that it's happening, then you might want to have some data to show that it actually is and not just simply throw it out there to scare people. So, you know, it does require careful attention to what our opponents are saying and calling them out when we see that they're falling short on a fact or two.
That was Chris Lindsay of the Marijuana Policy Project with Terry James. It's truly a family affair with the Illinois State football program. Brock Spak is in his eighth season as head coach. He's watched his son, linebacker Brent Spak, play for the last four seasons. He's set to graduate this fall. And Brock's daughter, Alicia Mays, is in her first season as the program's director of football operations. WJBC's Dick Ludke and Ted Schmitz talked with each of them during the Brock Spak Show at Schooners on WJBC this week.
Brock, you've been Brent Spak's coach for 5 years now because he redshirted his first year. You probably didn't fully know what that experience would be like coming
no,
into it.
I didn't.
Is it what you thought it would be?
Yeah, you know, it's been fine. You got to keep your mouth shut, and sometimes, and I'm harder on him than I am anybody else, and so I've gotten to where I the best thing for me is not just kind of walk away and not really coach him very much, because when I chew him out, he bristles up. Well, now when Coach Grunover comes, you know, he listens, of course. It's like typical father son. So I just walk away.
Yeah. That's what I did to my father.
Yeah. That's what I did mine too.
Yeah.
I'd be honest with you. I'd be less than honest if I'm looking forward to the opportunity to go back being dad again. You know, it's just hard to. It's a hard dynamic, and I don't know if I told you this. You know, Coach Stiglmeyer at North Southwest State has been a really good friend of mine ever since I walked in his league. He's always been very, very helpful and very, very complimentary. And he came up and he asked the same question, what you just did before our game a couple mm-hmm. of weeks ago. And he said, you know, how's that been? I said, well, it's a very interesting dynamic. He poked me in the chest and goes, it's a blessing. You got to watch your son play. I said, don't say it's been a blessing. I said, yes, sir, it's been a blessing.
That's good.
So, yeah, he's right. It's been fun to watch him
sure.
play. And I would never be able to see him play, so that's been the good part.
But how different was it for you as a dad watching Alicia play softball at Purdue when you weren't the coach? You could just be dad.
You know, I got really tired of that, too, because I got tired of parents. I'm sorry. Being softball parents out there, everybody sat next to a softball parent is really irritating. And I was sitting in the stands, and all these dads were travel coaches, right? They're all their daughters' coaches, and I never coached. I just went and watched my kid play. I didn't mind coach softball, and they're all travel coaches, so they know everything about the game. And I get a play-by-play, what this girl should do, this girl should do. They shouldn't be playing this kid. They should be playing that kid. I said, well, the coach is a former Olympian. She sees him every day. I think she's going to play the best player. So just let it go. I go sit out in left field and watch the game by myself. And my wife goes, you need to come back in the stands because you're being standoffish. I said, well, I can't stand listening to that anymore. So,
hilarious.
My best day was the last game she played. Unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
I love watching her play, but I got tired of the parents.
Oh,
it drove me insane. I couldn't take it. So.
Well, you know, your dad doesn't hold any punches now. We're going to ask you, what was it like playing for your dad for the last 5 years now? Huh? What about that?
I think it's been great.
Good man.
There's always been those up and down moments.
Yeah,
where we kind of got to hash things out. But I think we've really kind of come a long way from the first year. The first year was really experimental year where you're kind of figuring out how you work together and when you've never done it before. And obviously it's the first time he's really getting in your face. So you got to be
Yeah, it sounds like you got into it pretty good.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah. So it's kind of a different experience to go through. And he's always been harder on me, and I know why he's always been harder on me, because he's always trying to make me better than everybody else, and he expects more out of me. But other than that, it's been awesome. I mean, I wouldn't want it either way, because if I had gone anywhere else, he wouldn't be able to watch me play or been able to teach me everything that he's taught me. And in my opinion, he's one of the best coaches in the country, so why not play
good
for
man,
him?
We're kind of with you there, Brent, on that assessment of your head coach. He is one of the best in the country, if not the best in the football championship subdivision. Well, obviously your career has included a trip to the national championship game, two playoff berths so far, maybe a third. It's been obviously a rewarding experience for you.
Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. I don't know how else I would have wanted it to go, other than maybe winning a few other games and some other scenarios. But you can't hold that accountable for anything there. So
can't win them all.
But it's been great, and I've really enjoyed every moment. And I wouldn't take any of them back.
We're joined now by the former Alicia Spack, now Alicia Mays. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You were married. It was a little more than a year ago.
Yes.
How's that going?
It's going awesome. Except for right now we're living apart. He's still living in Kansas.
That's right.
But he'll be here before you know it in a few months.
Very good.
Yep.
Going to be worth it, though, right, what he's getting.
Absolutely. He's getting his PhD.
Yeah, that's right. Let everybody know that's
why
he's there.
His name is John.
His name is John.
And what's he getting his PhD in?
Sport management.
Very good.
Yeah.
So you guys share a love of athletics.
Yes. We met in grad school, so... We knew right off the bat that we had a lot in common. So
very nice. Mm-hmm. Well, how's the new job?
It's awesome. I've told people this is my dream job. I love it. I love everything about it. I love football more than any other sport, and I think that's kind of weird. Whenever college football Saturday starts, you know, in August or whenever, I get so excited. It's like Christmas to me. I wake up at 6 a.m. and I have to DVR game day. I love football. So
you were director of softball operations at Kansas, so you've had experience doing this sort of thing. What does your job entail? Tell us a little bit about it.
So I do everything behind the scenes. So I am the liaison between every single department. I make sure everything is ran smoothly. I do all travel, all alumni relations, you name it, I do it kind of thing. So
might be easier to ask you what you don't do.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Yeah. I guess I put out fires is more what I would say.
Okay.
She's good at it, too. She's good at her. They need this girl.
I've heard some very good reviews.
Yeah.
Let's just go back a little bit into your athletic history. You played softball at Purdue.
Yes, sir.
And obviously played softball in high school as well. Other sports in high school?
I played volleyball for my freshman year, and then I played basketball as well, freshman and sophomore year, but had to commit to one sport because I did travel softball year-round and was flying all over the country, so I didn't have time. And I've been lifting with Coach Lathrop since eighth grade. So,
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, I love strength and conditioning. I was going to go into that if I didn't do operations. But
wow.
Yeah, he's like another father to me. So
he's a good one, too, now.
He is.
Awesome.
So, yeah, those are the two.
What about these two guys? Any one-on-one basketball or anything against each other? Or just keep beating?
Tell them what we would do for fun over the holidays.
He's thinking.
Yeah, he can't remember that.
You
got to
tell him. You got to remind him. He's a guy now.
So
we're all guys.
I'm a little older than him.
Taking more hits than him.
Yeah.
I'm a little older than him.
6 years, right?
Six years older than him. But whenever we would have time off, Dad would take us into the office, and he would time us doing our 40s, our NFL shuttles, and the cone drills. And he kept it on his wall, and every year we'd try to improve our times.
Awesome.
And then we would try to compete against each other, but I had too much of an advantage when we were younger, but
sure.
I bet now he would kill me.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So how young were you when that started?
Oh, gosh. I would say Brent was 3.
You did have an advantage. Didn't you?
I was about 9.
You were 9.
Yep. So that was what we did for fun. That is the life of a coach's family.
You had a lot of fun.
Did he catch up to you in some areas eventually?
Yes. He's very quick side to side.
Yeah,
I might be faster straight ahead, but No, he's very quick side to
back
side.
Then.
Back then, yeah. Now, there's no way now.
Now, how about water skiing? We know that Brent is a very accomplished barefoot water skier.
Yes.
How about you?
I can water ski. I can slalom, and I've barefooted once, but I am nowhere near the talent that Brent has. He's quite talented at water skiing.
Are you hoping? Now, you're not allowed to do that when you play football at Illinois State, I assume.
Dad was more strict
at
on
least,
me.
At least
she was. She wasn't allowed to at all in high school or college, but okay. I kind of got away with it.
Because he's that good, yes.
Do you have a desire to keep doing that?
Oh, yeah. I actually just bought my first boat this summer. So I can't wait to get using that here in spring when the ice comes off the lake. Well, if we ever get any ice. Yeah.
Where will you do that? Out of Bloomington or
No, up at our place.
In Wisconsin?
Wisconsin,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that got a lot more room up there.
Bloomington, they have horsepower restrictions.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Our boat won't be able to go out there.
That's right. So. Okay, I got you. Okay.
So, Brent, do you, when Alicia was playing softball at Purdue, you were obviously out there watching her. How is that experience, watching an older sister play college softball?
I actually never really watched that often. I was more running around the ballparks,
okay.
getting into trouble. But, it was a lot of fun traveling to all the fun places and meeting new people. They had these things. They had these pins that you used to have to sell. Or, well, trade with people, and you would get them from your team. And so I would go around for her and trade these pins. I didn't really know how it worked. Like, you had to trade the big ones before the big ones. I would trade the little ones for the big ones, and I'd get yelled at when I get back. So, I was a little guy. I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
Eventually, she taught me how to do it, so I learned how to trade.
Has she taught you a lot?
Oh, yeah. Lots of different things.
Good to have a big sister in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're darn right.
Mm-hmm.
We have loved getting to know your family, and it's great to have all four of you here in town. This is kind of a special season, I guess, for all of you. You're gonna remember this. Even though it hasn't been the season that maybe you had hoped it would be, you guys are going to remember the 2016 season, I would think, for a long time.
Now it was Brock and Brent Spack and Alicia Mays with Dick Lutke and Ted Schmitz on WJBC This Week. The Weekend News is next. This WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz sent an email to students, faculty, and staff following some activities in response to the results of the presidential election. Chief of Staff Jay Grove says the election was one of the most contentious ever, and that meant some strong emotions.
What President Dietz wanted to do today was to urge students, faculty, and staff to treat each other especially well during this very emotional time.
ISU police reported minor acts of vandalism. There were also rumors of racial slurs and criminal hate activity on social media. Grove says if anyone knows of an act of intolerance, to report it to the Dean of Students' Office. And hundreds of students gathered on the ISU campus for a Black Lives Matter rally. It came a day after Donald Trump was elected president. Professor Larry Johnson says it's a chance for students to be heard.
Again, there are subpopulations and underrepresented groups who have some legitimate and serious concerns about, where's their place and where's their voice. So this is the means by which they're seeking that.
Former Congressman Aaron Schock faces 24 counts after being indicted this week by a federal grand jury. Illinois State University politics and government professor Tom McClure says you can tell by reading the 52-page indictment the FBI did its due diligence during the investigation. He says it's possible Schock ends up in prison.
I really don't know whether or not they are going to be using this as an inducement for him to help them in another indictment, but it doesn't look like it based on what I've read in the indictment.
McClure adds there's a good likelihood that Schock has to pay restitution at the minimum. Schock resigned in April of last year following questions about his campaign spending, including the remodeling of his Capitol Hill office in the style of the TV series Downton Abbey. The family of an ISU student killed by a drunk driver 2 years ago has used a foundation created in their son's name to create an endowed scholarship at the school. The parents of Michael Collins presented a $25,000 check from the Michael Collins Foundation, making the first ever endowed scholarship for ISU exercise science majors.
One of the things that our foundation strives for is to put love in action, and this is just one more example of that.
Collins' mother, Kelly Collins, says her son was an exercise science major and took his studies at ISU seriously. ISU President Larry Dietz says the contribution recognizes the generosity of the Collins family. U.S. Cellular Coliseum rolling out new security measures this weekend. The Coliseum has new metal detectors at all the entrance doors where patrons are being screened.
You know, it's very much becoming the industry standard. There are several large promoters who are now requiring all buildings that are hosting shows of theirs to have metal detectors in place.
Spokeswoman Nikki Dalby says patrons are asked to place large belt buckles, eyeglass cases, cameras, and cell phones into a tray before going through the metal detector. The new measures were put in place ahead of the Keith Urban concert on Saturday night, which was a sellout. And a former member of the Normal Town Council was this year's recipient of the WJBC Don Munson Spirit of McLean County Award. Sonia Reese received the honor during the American Red Cross Saluting Our Heroes breakfast.
I'm so appreciative of what this community has done for me and my family, for the quality of life that we have experienced, but more importantly, for the opportunity to get involved.
Spirit of McLean County Award recognizes significant contributions to the improvement in the area's initiative, industry, imagination, and compassion. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now we take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, the Bloomington City Council will look to set its property tax levy. Homeowners would actually see a slight reduction in their tax bill. On Tuesday, the McLean County Board will consider new rules regulating wind farms. On Wednesday, the McLean County League of Women Voters will host a forum on the changing media landscape. It'll be at the Normal Public Library. Also Wednesday, Illinois State Men's Basketball plays its home opener against Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne. And on Thursday, YWCA McLean County will host a humanity summit at Illinois Wesleyan's Memorial Center. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Starr.